The title of my sermon, The Spirituality of Imperfection, comes from a book by Ernest Kurtz and Catherine Ketchum. Say that 10 times fast, it's a little bit difficult. Who have written about alcoholism and AA, Alcoholics Anonymous. The subtitle of the book is Storytelling and the Search for Meaning. Through stories from many different sources, drawn, as Unitarian Universalism does, from the world's array of religious and philosophical traditions, the wisdom and teaching of prophetic people, and the lessons learned from science, Kurtz and Ketchum explore and describe the spirituality that undergirds the 12-step program model and has proven effective for so many people as they seek to heal from addictions of all kinds. Whether or not you personally struggle with addiction of any kind, the milieu of our 21st century world is rife with socioeconomic temptations that can be, if not outright are, habit-forming or even highly addictive. We, speaking in generalities, tend to turn to substances and behaviors that serve as coping mechanisms when life begins to feel even the least bit overwhelming, or as a way to stave off the possibilities of being overwhelmed. We numb our feelings, both physical and emotional, with food, alcohol, television, social media, and more. Why? How have we arrived at this place of avoidance or self-medication in the broadest senses? How is it that we would rather deny our culpability, for example, in systemic oppressions, ableism, sexism, heterosexism, and the insistence on gender conformity, racism, and white supremacy, than admit our mistakes and ignorance? I'm quite certain that the reasons are complex beyond the scope that I can point to in the space I can give for it, the purposes of my sermon today. However, I would like to lift up one or two threads that have particular relevance to us as Unitarian Universalists. You may be aware that Unitarianism and Universalism, as homegrown American religious traditions, developed during the late 18th and early 19th centuries with significant influence from the furtherance of pre-Enlightenment and Enlightenment ideas by such notable names as Bacon, Descartes, Locke, and Spinoza, as well as Voltaire, Smith, Rousseau, Kant, Hume, Hobbes, and Diderot. In the New World, religious developments included the New World views of deism, the notion that a supreme being set the universe in motion and left it to run on its own, like a great clockmaker, and atheism, that there is no God ruling the universe. These came into being here on the North American continent. An outgrowth of the scientific revolution, the Enlightenment and its new religious perspectives had as a focus the perfectibility of human nature. Religious humanism, in particular, advocated that our path as a species was onward and upward forever. There was no end to what we could achieve with our capacity for reason and improvement. With the striving for a perfect life, there were no limits. Progress was equated with perfectionism. Let me say as an aside that Americans are by no means the only nation or culture that has become far too enamored of idealism and perfectionism. These are legacies of 19th century enlightenment and the scientific advances of the modern age and have had a global influence. But they aren't doing us any favors as we grapple with the big social issues of our day, especially racism and white supremacy. To make a long story short, modern human society developed a reliance on perfectionism in everything. This, according to Kurtz and Ketchum, has resulted in the rejection of the reality of limitation and the suffering of spirituality. I remember being in a week-long training with my spiritual community about 12 years ago, and our teacher passing around two objects in the large circle of people without saying anything. We were asked to hold each object and study it for a short time when it came around to us. Both of the objects were apples. The first one was perfect in every way, perfect color, perfect shape, perfect surface. The second one had flaws. The surface had blemishes, and the color was somewhat mottled with spots that weren't red-hued. Its shape exhibited some asymmetry. After the apples had both been returned to our teacher, she asked some questions about beauty, desirability, and so forth. The group, who were primarily Europeans and European Americans, generally found the perfect apple much more aesthetically appealing. At this point, our teacher revealed that the perfect apple was not, in fact, real, although it looked and felt real enough. And I'll be honest here, this was a long time ago now, and I can't really recall why this wasn't obvious to everyone. It could have been more about the questions we were asked, but that these questions weren't asked until after we had interacted with the two apples. And for all I know, they were both imitations, but they were designed differently. The point of the exercise was to get us to reflect on the extent to which we value perfection over imperfection. A person who accepts the 12-step model professes in their working through the steps that they are imperfect, utterly human and fallible beings. Or, as I have heard someone somewhere put it, human becomings. We are perfectly imperfect. I, period, M, period, perfect. I am perfect. I am imperfect. This is a sign, not this sign, but a sign that I made for a worship service that I participated in a long, long time ago. We were talking about perfection, and I chose to focus on imperfection. I feel like I have been learning throughout my life from my imperfections. How many of you have struggled with accepting the outcome of your creative endeavors, and I don't just mean artistic, I mean creative endeavors, when the finished product didn't turn out the way you had envisioned it? That I cannot entirely control the way things turn out is a lesson I learned through the creative arts. The silkscreen print didn't always look the way I thought it would after laying down each color in turn. The clay pot I was trying to throw on the pottery wheel often seemed to have a mind of its own. As some of you have experienced that. I learned to accept the way things turned out, and in some cases, to shift my vision in a different direction. I made a series of pots then that had deliberately this imperfection that had happened spontaneously on the wheel. In ancient traditions, and those that have brought those ancient teachings through into modern culture, the values gained from embracing imperfection, impermanence, and paradox have had a prominent place in their teachings. Take, for example, this verse from the Tao Te Ching. True perfection seems imperfect, yet is perfectly itself. True fullness seems empty, yet it is fully present. True straightness seems crooked. True wisdom seems foolish. True art seems artless. The master allows things to happen. She shapes events as they come. She steps out of the way and lets the Tao speak for itself. Imperfections in works of art are often quite deliberately made and reflect the religious, philosophical, or cultural belief that only God, the divine ruler of the universe, can be seen as perfect. And maybe God isn't really perfect. Three distinctly different cultures from around the world serve as examples of this view of perfection and our human imperfection relative to the infinite. In Islam, both architecture and textiles are known to build imperfections into their overall design. On the surface, the structure or design looks perfectly symmetrical and without flaw. However, on closer examination, one finds that the archway doesn't meet exactly in the middle, or there is something different woven into the carpet. In fact, authentic antique textiles from the Middle East always contain a flaw of some kind. The flaw may be a change in the pattern, whether in shape or color. Likewise, you can find architectural imperfections in the medieval cathedrals of Christianized Europe, despite the influence of Greek aesthetics on the notions of beauty. Think of the Pythagorean theorem and Da Vinci's drawing of Vitruvian man, the one they sent into space in the proportions of man. Everything is perfect, right? Perfection personified through mathematics. Only Allah, only God, is perfect. The Navajo people of southwestern North America also deliberately incorporated an imperfection into their weaving. In this case, the imperfection, a line in the border that goes to the edge of the weaving, serves an important purpose. During the weaving process, the artisan has put their entire being, or maybe just part of it, into the weaving. And the spirit line or spirit pathway provides a means for the weaver's spirit to exit safely. Similar to the religious architecture of Europe and the Islamic world, you can find architectural imperfections in Japanese tea houses and other places for worship and meditation. A particularly Japanese aesthetic are ceramics made with deliberate flaws. These fall under the heading of wabi-sabi. The two words, wabi and sabi, are separate concepts that have become linked over time. Wabi by itself can be thought of as natural or rustic, while sabi often connotes seclusion and quietude. Examples of wabi-sabi artistry often have an asymmetrical shape, rough surfaces, or contrasting materials filling cracks and spaces in the object. The word shibui is applied to wabi-sabi objects and speaks of the hidden beauty that is perceived therein. It comes from inside. The philosophy of wabi-sabi is different from the broken pot made beautiful that Kristen told us about in the Time for All Ages this morning. UU singer-songwriter Peter Mayer created a wonderful song called Japanese Bowl that compares our imperfect human lives to kintsugi, another Japanese aesthetic. Kintsugi are ceramic objects that have gotten broken and been repaired using an amalgam of lacquer and a precious metal, such as gold, silver, or platinum, to bind the pieces back together again, making it whole. The philosophy of kintsugi also values the flawed and imperfect, but it does so through embracing the history of the object, including getting broken. The gold-filled cracks don't hide the damage or brokenness. They allow the object to retain its usefulness. It would never go back in that display case that Kristen described. Kintsugi and wabi-sabi encompass impermanence, non-attachment, and acceptance of change, which are all aspects of the spirituality of imperfection. As Peter Mayer sings, I'm like one of those Japanese bowls that were made long ago. I have some cracks in me. They have been filled with gold. That's what they used back then when they had a crack to mend. It did not hide the cracks. It made them shine instead. So now every old scar shows from every time I broke, and anyone's eyes can see I'm not what I used to be, but in a collector's mind, all of these jagged lines make me more beautiful and worth a much higher price. I'm like one of those Japanese bowls. I was made long ago. I have some cracks you can see. See how they shine of gold. We, all of us here, all of us in our human family, are like one of these Japanese bowls. We can't possibly get through life without sustaining heartbreak and scars or making mistakes and missteps. We are not perfect now in our adulthood. We certainly weren't perfect as teenagers or children. Nor are human beings all good all of the time. According to Kurtz and Ketchum, because paradox is at our very core, the spirituality of imperfection suggests that only by embracing the dark side of our ambiguous natures can we ever come to know the light. Leonard Cohen's anthem says, "There is a crack in everything. That's how the light gets in." That golden light of divine love that fills the spaces of our brokenness and binds the pieces back together so we can continue to risk and be of use in the world. This is a way that we can understand the spirituality of imperfection. We are broken and whole at the same time. Hallelujah. My closing words are by Angela Herrera. All that you need lies within you. Consider this an invitation to you. Yes, you. With all your happiness and your burdens, your hopes and regrets. An invitation if you feel good today, and an invitation if you do not, if you are aching, and there are so many ways to ache. Whoever you are, however you are, wherever you are in your journey, this is an invitation into peace. Peace in your heart, and peace in your heart, and with every breath, peace in your heart. Maybe your heart is heavy or hardened. Maybe it's troubled, and peace can take up residence only in a small corner, only on the edge with all that is going on in the world and in your life. Nemodo, it doesn't matter. All that you need for a deep and comforting peace to grow lies within you. Once it is in your heart, let it spread into your life. Let it pour from your life into the world. And once it is in the world, let it shine on all beings. Would you rise for our chalice extinguishing words? And you may connect with each other by holding hands if that is something that's comfortable for you. We extinguish this chalice, for the worship has ended. Our service begins.